Hi, this is Dave, and it's been 3 years since we launched Galactic Netcasts. And over that time, some shows have come and gone, but the one thing that stayed the same is our commitment to you, the best listeners on the internet. And that's why we're asking for your help. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us build the best sci-fi, science, and geek culture-based podcast network in the galaxy. And all you have to do is go to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. That's Patreon, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Thank you for your support, and on with the show!
By your command.
Felt a great disturbance in the Force.
Resistance is futile.
You built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Exterminate!
Silent Breed is people!
I'll be back.
That sounds like something out of science fiction.
We live in a spaceship, dear.
Hear ye! Hear ye! I'm Dave Nelson, and on this 31st day of July, 2014, I call to order this, the 18th meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Let's commence with the roll call. Matt Stein, are you here?
Yes, Dad.
Matt, your question this week is, if you could do your live show in front of a group of characters from a certain science fiction... Hang on one second. This is almost exactly the same question that I have for Allie. That's weird. Well, okay. I'll ask the same question of you guys, because you're both performers, you're both musicians. If you could do your live show, or a live show, in front of a group of characters from a certain science fiction universe, who would they be and why?
I originally was trying to think of someone that's deaf. And then I changed my answer to Predators, because I feel like Predators would be able to appreciate my death metal stylings a little more than anyone else.
Because they're...
kind of a dread thing going on.
Yeah, they got the dreadlocks, and if they didn't like me, they could just vaporize my face with their shoulder guns.
And they're into death. So death metal kind of goes hand in hand, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Good answer. Let's see. Brad Ludwig, are you here?
I am.
Okay. If you were a superhero and had to have a secret identity, what would it be?
I would be Anton Fitzsimmons, professional pet groomer.
Would you be wearing some kind of disguise?
Yeah, I'd probably wear some kind of trendy glasses and a lab coat. You know, you want to keep the dog hair and stuff off you, so.
You know, I was just thinking about this. It's funny how the original superhero, Superman, his disguise is backwards, right? Where he's Superman, he looks more like himself, right? But when he's Clark Kent, he tries to disguise himself as to somebody he's not. And most superheroes are the other way around, right?
Correct.
Just weird. I just thought of that. Maybe it's something that you guys knew all along, but I just got it now. So,
you guys are nerds.
Well, being the resident comic book nerd with way more comic books than a human being should be allowed to own, yeah.
Like 30,000, was it? Was that the number?
No, just six.
Oh, okay.
Let's not get carried away here.
All right, roll call time. Anessa Moyens, are you here?
Yes.
Okay, if you were an alien, what kind would you be and why?
Man, there's a lot of aliens out there. Maybe of the reptilian variety, so that way I can mess with people, pull off the mask a little bit in pictures, move so it's blurry, make people think they're crazy.
Okay.
Conspiracies.
I get it. You don't want to be the grays that you can be like, you can use your, telekinetic ability and your mind reading ability and,
I thought about that, but I want to mess with people.
Okay. All right. Well, that's nice of you. You're a nice alien, then.
I want people to sound like they're crazy.
Okay. All right. So that's your roll call. Let's introduce this week's guest geek. She is a musician, an artist, and a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins Ice Crew. She has released four self-published albums. I'm tongue-tied. Some of those songs have been featured on MTV's The Real World and Oxygen's Bad Girls Club. In college, Allie began playing drinking game concerts by taking the idea of a power hour, drinking 60 shots of beer in an hour, and mixing it with a live show. She wrote 61-minute drinking songs, performed them live, and then she started to put them out on an album. And, Brad, you know more about this. Do you want to talk about, or let's just get Allie on and we'll talk about it with her.
Let's talk to her, because it was a brilliant idea. It's a shot glass with, oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Hey, I'm going to stop talking now.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Allie Spagnola. Allie, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
That's your fanfare right there.
Yeah,
we have a low budget.
We have a low budget, so we don't have much of a fanfare, unfortunately.
So welcome, Allie. You want to talk about your Power Hour and how you came up with the concept and how you released the album in that very unique way, and then maybe touch on the lawsuit a couple years ago? Was it a couple years ago, or is it just more recent than that?
Yeah, it just wrapped up maybe a year ago.
Okay.
I play a live show that doubles as a drinking game, and so when I'm performing, the audience is playing along. It's like an interactive party, and it's called a Power Hour, which hopefully some people have heard of. It's like a common well-known drinking game, but some guy claimed that he invented it and that he owned Power Hour and tried to stop me from playing my shows and selling my album, which is BS, and I had to fight him in court, and it took a 3-year legal battle, and a whole crap ton of money, beat him, and then I toured the country to celebrate, and it was awesome.
Now, were you doing the Power Hour during the litigation, during the lawsuit, when it was going on?
It was. My lawyer said I could, and that I could still, like, sell my music and stuff, so that was good.
That's cool. Well, congrats.
But it got me taken down off of, like, Amazon and RDO and, like, other web server music services, and so that's why I had to fight him, because I couldn't just ignore it. He was affecting my business.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. It's your bread and butter, or your whatever would be the equivalent for the Power Hour. I don't know.
Shot glass and beer?
Yeah.
I was thinking yeast and hops, but, you know.
Yeah. So how did you release the album, the Power Hour album, and it was in a kind of a unique way. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, it comes on a shot glass. You can drink out of the album. It's like a shot glass I invented with a little USB in the bottom of it, and it pulls out and...
I think Allie might have some bandwidth issues on her side, on her end.
Uh-oh. There we go.
All right, what did you hear last? I think I'm back.
Okay, yeah, you're back.
Okay, so USB pulls out from the bottom and...
The music is on it. End.
Sweet.
That's all you missed.
That's one
doesn't
whole...
the shot glass have like a necklace, like a lanyard?
Oh yeah, it's on a lanyard so you can wear the party. Because like, if you're partying, you don't want to be holding something, so you just let it go and keep on partying.
Or if you've had enough to drink, then you don't necessarily lose track of where it is because it's around your neck.
Exactly.
Nice. All right. Well, again, welcome to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Allie. Let's get into the show here. We talk about the week's science fiction news. But before we do that, we have to kind of review what we talked about during the last meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. And as always, Brad does that. Brad, give us the review from last week.
Okay. Last week's guest geek was Scott Johnson. Of Frog Pants Studios. He brought to the table the J.J. Abrams Shows Off the X-Wing Prop in Video. So it was a video for a charity that he is working with. And as you pull away from J.J. Abrams, a X-Wing pilot walks past him, and you notice that this thing behind him is actually an X-Wing, and the pilot gets into this. It's a huge... working prop, and it was amazing to see. So we know that the practical effects are a big part of the new film.
And
so
don't forget the little droid too, the little droid that was in
yes.
the video.
Absolutely. Matt brought to the table the military tasks Hollywood to help create Iron Man suit. So they've actually tapped Hollywood to work on making basically exoskeletal suit for soldiers to wear for added protection and also to allow them to carry more weight. This has been an ongoing project that hasn't yielded a whole lot of results before they tapped Hollywood, and they seem to be making a lot of headway now. And actually, they're using 3D printing to kind of quickly pop out their prototypes to see what works, what doesn't. So
one of the cool things that Scott brought up the fact that they should do more of a Edge of Tomorrow thing than Iron Man thing. It makes more sense. It's more practical, I guess.
Yeah, I think you have to kind of weigh protection versus you know what I'm saying. If they're going to put people out in the field with these things, they're going to try to slap as much protection on them as possible. So you're probably going to be taking the Iron Man route regardless. The story I brought to the table was a James Gunn interview where he spoke of the movies that you should watch before you see Guardians of the Galaxy, which Aness and I will be seeing this evening. Pretty pumped about that. A lot of the spaghetti westerns are things that he mentioned, like A Fistful of Dollars, A Few Dollars More, and a number of other really good films that capture the tone of what he's going for the movie. Dave brought to the table the cast and details of Orphan Black's new show from on Sci-Fi called Killjoys. One of the cast additions is Sean Ashmore from Warehouse 13 fame. And last but certainly not least, Anessa brought the story of why Zoe Saldana prefers sci-fi films. And it's because of she enjoys playing strong female characters. And unfortunately, it has to be done in science fiction and not other genres of movies where you have those types of characters.
You'd think that we would have gotten further. You know, because it seems like such an antiquated concept. Like it seems like 1966 Star Trek. You know how Nichelle Nichols played the Uhura character because it was a strong female character. Ironically, it's the same character that Zoe Saldana plays in the Star Trek reboot franchise.
The nice thing about what they did with her version of Uhura is she actually did stuff. You know, in the classic series, she was a glorified secretary, but in the movie, she's actually toe-to-toe speaking with Klingons in the second film, trying to, save the lives of the captured folks on the Klingon homeworld. So,
you know what sucks is in the uncut version of that scene, there was a lot, she did a lot more than what was shown in the final product.
Yeah, I have yet to see that cut scene, and I was really upset that they divided all the different bonus material and all the different versions of, the Target version had this, the Best Buy version had that on it, and I think they're going to be releasing a all-in-one, all the extra bonuses on one disc here pretty soon, because I think there was enough backlash on that.
Well, let's ask the female side of the panel. How you guys, Allie and Anessa, how you guys feel about strong female roles? Do you think there's enough in non-science fiction films, or do you think they're pretty well represented in science fiction?
I think they're better represented in science fiction opposed to other genres, but I think there's also a bit more of an increase in stronger female characters in other genres as well. It's just there's still the popular guy rescues girl, even in children's movies. And so I think a lot of people really enjoyed even Disney's film Frozen, where the ultimate thing was you didn't need a prince to save you. And the ridiculousness of marrying someone that you just met. and that was just kind of a nice change of pace from a lot of what they've done in the past. And I think we're starting to now see an increase in characters, not just in science fiction, that's always kind of had stronger female characters, but in other genres, but there's still a lot of work to be done outside of science fiction.
Okay, good answer. Thank you. All right. Allie, you got anything to add, Allie?
I mean, yeah, she pretty much summed it up, right? There's definitely somewhere to go for sure, but we're getting there, not just in science fiction, but also there's still like way over sexualized women in science fiction, which, you know, things us too. I mean, not just science fiction, but we're definitely not where we should be in terms of that too.
There was an interesting panel at San Diego Comic-Con this last weekend. It was all like either it was all female comic book artists, or it was just a panel of artists from comic books talking about female characters in comic books and how they're trying to advance and, you know, desexualize them and make them more, you know, not as using their femininity less and using their, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Basically to highlight other assets rather than their assets.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks for bailing me out there, Anessa.
You're welcome. But I mean, even, yeah, in comic books, if you just look at the covers of them, even though you may have a comic book that has a strong female character that's kicking butt, she's still showing off her butt with a short skirt and halter top with boobs. I mean, you don't necessarily need that.
Yeah, it's not necessary. Not necessary at all. All right, let's move on. Let's get into the meat of things. Start with new business. And as always, Matt has the first story.
The story I found was the Deadpool test footage that got leaked. As a lot of people know, over the past few years, they've learned that the Zombieland writers, Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, had a Deadpool script ready to go. After that, Tim Miller joined as the director, and Lauren Shuler Donner is going to be the producer. Ryan Reynolds also confirmed as playing Deadpool. The video is supposedly a myth, and people are thinking that with Comic-Con and everything that came out, that it surfaced, whether it was by accident or not. But I actually managed to watch it once, and then I saw it get posted on Reddit at work and didn't think twice of it, and since been pulled down by Fox, which isn't really a big surprise. But the video was a CGI representation of what Ryan Reynolds said, how awesome Deadpool could be. It starts out with Wade Wilson in a full Deadpool outfit singing Gwen Stefani's Holla Back Girl, which I almost crapped my pants laughing when I heard. And then he breaks the fourth wall and like drops into a car full of thugs and basically talks all sorts of crap and then beats the living crap out of them. And then that's kind of where it ends. So that's all we really have to go on as far as what Deadpool might be. The current major holdup for the reason the film isn't really steamrolling forward is that they can't decide what they want to do for the rating. People are saying rated R. If it's not rated R, you're not going to get the Deadpool experience, which I can agree with. But they want to kind of make it PG-13 because then everyone can see. So there's the battle between make Deadpool what Deadpool should be or make Deadpool what can make the company's money. And then the budget's still an issue, but I think the rating is a bigger deal than that. So
see, I guess I didn't read the article because I saw this come up a bunch of times over the last few days. I thought it was like a movie that was going to be made, not a movie that is being made.
There's a fine line between is being made and was being made. Oh. I guess the way that you're saying, like, they're trying really hard to make it, but there's roadblocks that are stopping them from making it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. So it's not currently being made, but they would
Correct.
Like to.
Yes. So, I mean, Ryan Reynolds is going to play Deadpool. They have writers with a script. They have a producer. They have a director. They just haven't solidified a budget or the rating, which I think the rating will determine the major course of the actual movie. And so, this... I mean, it could be a while before we see one, a Deadpool movie, but I don't know. Deadpool kind of like... And, everyone knows I don't read comic books, so I don't really pay attention to the lesser characters. But in recent history, Deadpool kind of made this like weird come out of nowhere. Like there was a Deadpool video game, and now there's all this talk about Deadpool, the movie. And I don't know if it's just I'm just now paying attention to things because you guys make me do it, or it's actually more readily available. But
pay attention.
We don't make you do.
Deadpool seems like someone I'd want to hang out with.
We don't make you do anything, Matt. I don't know.
Watch crappy movies.
Well, if I want to be here, I have to pay attention to science fiction. So, yes, you make me do things I don't want to do.
So, Brad, who publishes Deadpool? What character is that? What company?
That's Marvel Comics.
Oh, it is? Okay, I wasn't sure. So they're not... That's not a Marvel joint that's making that movie? They're not... It's not Marvel Studios?
What's it?
They don't have
What's
the...
What's that, Dave?
They don't have the... Marvel doesn't have the rights to that movie to make it in their studio or with their studio?
No. It would be, Deadpool is a mutant, so... He is a Fox property.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I forgot about that part. Okay. All right. I didn't know. Interesting. Yep. Okay.
So, just because I feel like we're leaving Allie out here, did you get a chance to see the footage, or?
Actually, I don't know much about Deadpool, so. Oh,
okay, cool.
Yeah, I feel like good commenting, because I don't.
No, that's fine.
In Allie's defense, like, I never really thought twice about Deadpool until an old coworker of mine explained to me what he is.
Well,
he is hilarious because he's like a perverted psychopath. So when you see all these, there's obviously with Comic-Con, you'll see a lot of like GIFs that pop up on Reddit of people cosplaying as Deadpool, and he'll just like walk up and like stare at a girl's chest. And had I not known what Deadpool, you know what I mean? But it's like it's funny knowing.
Deadpool is a Marvel character who, a Canadian lab created Wolverine, right? He already had healing abilities, he had the claws, and all they did is basically slap on the adamantium skeleton to make him kind of a better killer. With that success, and with the testing they did on him, they tried to make other Weapon X's, which is what Wolverine's designation was, okay? Wade Wilson was a guy who had terminal cancer and he was going to die. And he was horribly scarred up from all the therapies that he was doing and things like that. And they gave him this Weapon X treatment, which, good news, destroyed the cancer. Bad news, he has regenerative abilities, but he is never going to heal that scarring that his body has all over. The treatment also kind of warped his mind a bit, so that's why you get this whole weirdness to the character, and he is kind of he's an assassin with a slight heart of gold, sort of. But the other thing, too, and it was the way the story is written, is that Deadpool, being a little bit crazy, also knows that he is a character in a comic book. So that's why he's always addressing the audience in the comic, and which is why you get that him breaking the fourth wall in the movie. That's kind of consistent with how he's written in the comics.
Okay, so he's in the Marvel universe. Like, he can be alongside other characters that we know, but he is the only one that knows that he's in a comic.
Essentially, yes, and everybody else thinks he's crazy for saying that, but we as the readers of the comic know that that's true, and everybody's kind of like, oh, this Deadpool's got some stuff going on there mentally, even though he's a little cracked. And I think one of the things that they wanted to kind of clear up too, Wolverine... Origins, the one where we kind of get more of his story, Wolverine's story, and the first appearance of Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. So he's already appeared as Deadpool.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And, well, a lot of people didn't watch the movie because it kind of sucked. But Ryan Reynolds did a really good job with that character. And X-Men... This latest X-Men movie kind of cleared up some of the timeline issues and kind of brought Singer's stuff that he did in the early 2000s and the subsequent stuff and kind of fixed a lot of the inconsistencies and issues that they had editorially.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that now, with that cleared out of the way, all of the bad things that were done with the Deadpool character in that Wolverine film can now be fixed person retroactively ignored and they could move ahead with this newer version.
Is the Weapon X serum the same as the Super Soldier serum from Captain America, or is it something different?
No. It's completely different.
Okay, all right. That's the only question I have. Let's move forward with your story.
I'm surprised I know all that stuff and have managed to kiss a girl. All right, so my story is NASA's new spacecraft will have Star Trek-like cockpit. This thing is pretty awesome. It's called the Orion, and the story, I grabbed this from IO9. The initial comparison is how you look at, like, the movie Alien, 1979. Sigourney Weaver goes into the room, or Sigourney Weaver's character, goes into the room where Mother is, and Mother is the operating system for the ship. And there are literally lights and switches and everything everywhere. But it's all really kind of useless girth that just really was there for the sake of looking pretty. But it's not practical. So the Orion project that they're working on is going to be compact. They're going to be using a system that they've dubbed EPROC, which is shortened for electronic procedures. And this operating system essentially is going to have a very streamlined look to it, but the gauges and relevant information are going to pop up at the appropriate times. There will be switches and stuff for emergencies and, you know, adjustments that might need to be made. But they're going to have this very streamlined, and it's going to appear on a glass console. And it doesn't look too unlike the Star Trek The Next Generation, kind of the comm console, to a certain degree with the kind of the ergonomic styling to it. But it's just really, really fascinating. Lightweight, balanced, everything is easy to get at. And like I said, the relevant controls will pop up for them to make adjustments at the appropriate time.
You know what this reminds me of, Brad? This reminds me of Google Now, about how it pops things up for you when it's relevant, like when Google thinks that you need this information, like time to work or like bus information or sports scores. It's kind of the same deal, kind of along the same lines.
Yeah.
iOS does that too.
And it just, the crux of the article is pretty much, hey, look at where we've come. You know, you go back to the Apollo missions and the way the cockpit was set up there while it was streamlined for the time period. You know, there was a lot of gauges and they had to make room for all of that stuff. Well, now we've reached the point in technology where we can kind of condense that. I mean, you know, with what we can do with a smartphone, we're advancing the consoles and the controls in a spacecraft to that point to keep up. So it's a really wonderful, innovative approach that it's going to be cool to see where they go with it.
Yeah, what was the number they had in that? Because I read the article as well. They had the number of gauges and switches in the shuttle. It was like 100, like 600 or something, some crazy number like that. Is that in the article? Or maybe it's not the shuttlecraft. It's some older spacecraft that we've been using or we had used in the past.
It's a very good question. Okay, NASA astronaut and space shuttle veteran Lee Morin, wearing a blue jumpsuit with a Mach 25 badge, tells me that the shuttle cockpit had 1,249 switches.
Okay, I knew it was a
crazy
number.
There were approximately 2,000 for the whole vehicle.
Jeez. Okay, yeah. There's no need for that. Not at all. That would just be confusing.
Not anymore.
Yeah, okay.
Well, considering when the space shuttle program was put into action, Enterprise being the first one, that was in the early 80s.
76 is when they...
Oh, 76,
The development of the space shuttle goes back to right after or right before the Apollo program ended.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's ancient technology.
But looking at the photo that they have available to... I'm going to pull this up real quick. So if folks are actually watching the video portion of the show, hang on.
I don't see a shot glass with a USB connected to it, though. That's what they need.
See, they need to party in space. But you notice that they do have a joysticks for controls, but they are trying to streamline this whole operation here. And two, I would assume that they have redundancies for a power outage or anything like that. So they do have to have some form of manual control, just in case. But I mean, this is way stripped down.
Yeah, definitely. Did you guys see the inside of the new version of the Dragon capsule that SpaceX is producing? That looks pretty awesome as well. It's got a lot of that same clean look, very, you know, minimalistic, I guess, with what they have.
Yep. Well, considering how many people they have to launch into space at one time, or that they're attempting to launch into space at one time with that craft.
Yeah.
For as small as it is, yeah. It's pretty amazing.
So if there's room for an app, one app in this spaceship, okay, let's go around the panel here. What app would you want as integrated part of the computer systems in this spacecraft? Matt, what's your app of choice? You're going to space with.
Oh, that's really tough because there's a lot of things that I like to fill my time with. going to space with one app, something music related. I'm not going to have internet connectivity in space, so I can't say Spotify.
But you could do like Google Play and save songs to your device or Amazon.
Yeah, but this is so hard, Dave. You shouldn't have let me go first.
Okay, Brad. While you're thinking of the answer, Brad, what's your answer?
Any app that would track where the International Space Station is.
In case you get lost along the way?
In case you get lost, or if you're having issues with your navigation on your craft, you can at least know exactly where it is to try to help you land it or attach to the ISS safely.
All right, good answer. Going back to Matt, you got the answer yet?
Quick question. Do I have internet in space?
Yes.
Yes.
Reddit.
All right.
Dunzo.
Okay.
Boom.
Hours of entertainment.
Fun never stops on Reddit.
Anessa, what app do you want in the spaceship?
Oh, gosh. I have no clue.
Angry
probably
Birds.
Probably something simple. Nah. Threes. Why not Threes?
Okay. All right. Good answer.
A nice little game, simple, entertaining. You can pick up and leave off whenever, so that way you're not always flying or doing something serious.
All right. Allie, what's your app? What app do you want on this spaceship?
I know you thought I was going to say my Power Hour app, but...
Oh, I didn't know that you had a Power Hour app. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, it's coming out next month. I mean, if I get approved, I've been rejected 3 times now, so...
Oh, man. Okay.
Ooh. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, seriously. But yeah, I want Evernote on my spacecraft.
Oh, there you go.
I feel like I could write some like really poignant songs out in the endlessness of space, and so I need someplace to put the lyrics, right?
Yeah, just think of the inspiration that you will get from being in space. So you need something. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. See, that's the upside to being a drummer instead of a singer, because all I have to do is show up and make a bunch of noise when everyone else's stuff is done.
All right.
It's like, how fast are we going? All right.
Yeah.
That's all I need to know.
Cool. All right. Let's move on to the next story, and I believe it's mine, right? Yeah, it is.
Yes.
Have you guys seen the new trailer for Interstellar, the Christopher Nolan film?
Yes.
Nope.
So sorry, Dave.
Hey, Anne Hathaway's in the movie.
Yes.
I didn't know that before.
Yes, Anne Hathaway. It's Matthew McConaughey. All right, all right, all right. So basically, they screened it at Comic-Con over the weekend. They have since released the trailer online. I saw it yesterday, and I was blown away, man. This movie has the potential of some really like big concept ideas. Like, what was Christopher Nolan's film? Not the Batman series, but where they go inside.
Inception?
Yeah, Inception. Yeah. It's got a lot of ideas like Inception. Like, because basically Matthew McConaughey's, and they talk about this in the trailer. His character has to make the decision to go into space and find basically an inhabited planet for the people on Earth, because Earth is dying, spoiler alert, in this film. And there's no place in the solar system they can go to save humankind. So they figure out, or they find out, a way of traveling interstellar. And he has to go on this mission. And the big question is, how long is he going to be gone? And that's brought up in the trailer. And he has to make this big decision about, you know, either not see his kids for years or save everybody's kids for the rest of humanity. So that's one of the big questions and big subjects that's tackled in this movie. And I highly recommend that you guys check out the trailer. There's also an interview with Nolan, he was interviewed at Comic-Con about the movie, and he really wanted to make the movie, you know, on par with 2001 Space Odyssey. You know, not like similar story or anything like that, but basically scope and scale, make it a really, really big movie. So I'm very much looking forward to checking this out. And they've released trailers before, but this is the first one when they actually show them in space and on alien planets. Like, there is a scene where they're on a rocky planet. And then there's another scene where they're, like, struggling in some kind of body of water, and there's this big X-shaped object that's barreling towards them. So we're not really sure what those things are, but it looks pretty awesome. Brad, your thoughts on it?
It looked amazing and finally gave us a better sense of what was at stake and where they're going with the film, and it seemed pretty darn cool. And I know that they're working with a physicist, too, to make sure that they're – because they travel through a wormhole, so I think they're trying to make sure that they stick with, you know, the theoretical physics behind that to keep it as legit as possible.
I'm bummed that Anne Hathaway doesn't sing in the movie. That's the problem here.
She does have an amazing voice, that's for sure. It really does have a huge feel to it, and the effects for the wormhole, what little you see, it almost looks like a distortion in space. And I think going with what little I've read about concerns about traveling through a wormhole is the distortion of space. I mean, if you travel through it and you don't know how long this thing is, you could literally, you know, travel essentially 100, you know, 200 years or a way long distance in the future, essentially, relatively speaking. So I think, you know, one of the concerns is if he leaves his kids, you know, is he going to come back and be the same age and meet his great grandkids? So I think that's some of the...
Is it me, or are, like, pure science fiction movies and TV shows starting to become more and more frequent now? I know we talked about this tonight on the Alien Invasion podcast, how sci-fi is launching another, like, space show, because they have a whole list of these shows that they're trying to get produced and on the air. Are you guys getting the feeling that there's, like, more pure science fiction, and this one is, like, one of the first? I mean, Christopher Nolan, come on. That's huge. That's a huge director-producer to have behind your film, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So.
No, I think it is kind of a big deal. And I think with some of the dumbing down of science, and it seems like there's kind of more of a push to. Our education system isn't really all that great anymore. So I think the importance of Cosmos, what Neil deGrasse Tyson did to try to get science more in the fore and get people interested in science is kind of the counter to the dumbing down of our education system through budget cuts and whatnot. So I think we're seeing kind of a pushback the other way to bring science more to the fore, to make it as interesting as possible, and to keep so that we can keep making advances in science. We need people interested in science, and I think that's part of what this is trying to accomplish.
I think science fiction helps with that too, especially if it's done right. If it's not done right, then it's probably doing more damage than good, actually. So,
which kind of segues into my story.
All right. Well, let's do that. Let's go into your story. What do you got, Anessa?
Well, going back to the progression of science fiction being more science-y, a common theme that we come across in science fiction is dystopian societies, post-apocalyptic themes, and there's some people that are trying to get science fiction writers, trying to encourage them to write more positive stuff versus, oh, robots are going to take over the world, humans are all going to die, we're going to turn into zombies, civilization's going to collapse, whatever. So, and so yeah, that kind of reminds me of the progression. And as one person, a science fiction writer named David Brin says, he says, it's so easy to make money with the tale that civilization is garbage, our institutions will never be helpful, your neighbors are all useless sheep who could never be counted on in a crisis. And he feels that we've gotten way too fond of speculative technological bummers, is how he puts it. And I think that's a great way. And they list some examples like Blade Runner, The Matrix, Children of Men, The Hunger Games, Divergent. And another author named Neal Stephenson, the author of Cryptonomicon.
Cryptonomicon?
Yes, Cryptonomicon. I'm like, I can't say that word. Yep. And he typically writes these types of stories. And on stage at a conference, he was complaining that there are no big scientific projects to inspire people these days. And this president of Arizona State University shot back and he says, you're the one slacking off, meaning you as in science fiction writers, because it's always been kind of a thing where science fiction writers think of future scenarios, new technologies, and that kind of gives engineers a place to look forward to, get ideas from, try to innovate, invent, and get to that point. And now we're stuck in this mindset that everything's doom and gloom, and they're wanting for more science fiction writers to write more positive science fiction stories that can basically inspire other people, be it scientists, engineers, anything of the like, to continue to make advances, essentially. And I thought that it was a really good point. And it was after the president at Arizona State mentioned that Stevenson, like, really stepped back and looked at everything and looked at what he's been writing. And he realized that he's right. You know, he's guilty. He's guilty of the doom and gloom. And so I just thought it was a really interesting article from PRI, Public Radio International. And I believe it's available as a podcast as well. But yeah, they're trying to, they started the Center for Science and the Imagination in Arizona State, and they've created another group called Project Hieroglyph, which recruits science fiction writers to write more optimistically about the future. And so they're trying to set up a movement to where we start moving ahead and we're not just stuck on the end of day stories. So
I think also, I don't think you can really, I mean, I can see where they're going with this, and I think that would help get more positive, you know, stories of the future or positive science fiction. But I think that you really can't dictate the type of fiction that is popular. I think.
Well, you can't dictate, but you can at least put it out there and make it available. Because if you do a search for science fiction on Amazon, the bulk of what you're going to find is end of days, doom and gloom, robopocalypse, zombie outbreaks, viral outbreaks that wipe out all of humanity, and you have these survivors. And so if you have writers that are willing to put out more stories, give people more options, then maybe further on down the road, it'll make a comeback in popularity. But now, like I said, if you do a search for science fiction, the bulk of them are going to be dystopian societies. And people need more options. They need more things to read.
I mean, what you're talking about, though, isn't so much our thoughts on the future, but really a reflection of how people feel about the now. I think it's because we're in an economy that's struggling and in a current world where things are uneasy, and that's reflected in then what we write about, and it really has not much to do about how we feel about that far in the future that we're writing, but more about the world that we're experiencing at the moment.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think if you go back, to the 1960s, you had Star Trek, which was this pretty bright, optimistic view on what the future might be, and that's the attitudes people had back in the 1960s. And I don't think since maybe that happened a little bit in the 1980s, but there's been dark periods in between then, the 1970s, 1990s, up until now, where the future isn't so bright, right? And I think that's reflected in literature and in pop culture, but also media, movies and TV as well.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that the article brings up, is that we also tend to focus on more explosions, and they kind of want people to focus on more reality. And so
I think Michael Bay.
But no, I kind of think The Martian is kind of a good example of one that isn't a doom and gloom society science fiction book. That could, it's not too far in the future. It kind of gives something like an idea for people to aspire to, like making their way to Mars. And even though it's totally fictional about this guy being stuck on Mars, you know, someone would be like, oh, hey, like, this could potentially be a problem. Like, how would we work through that? How would we do this? Like, what other ways can it help? And so I think that's just kind of what they're getting at, is less explosions, a little less doom and gloom, and just give people a little more option out there.
Hey, Anessa. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the book The Martian. That's by this author. His name is Andy Weir, right? Right?
Yes.
We're going to have him on the show in a few weeks.
Yes, we are.
Funny that you would say that. I couldn't go past that without mentioning that we're going to have the author on the show.
Name dropper.
Yes.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I just bring it up because that's the most recent thing that I've started reading that wasn't really dystopian future.
Yeah. Well, I hope they at least continue a little bit. If the trend slows down.
Well, I mean, it's fine to continue, but I mean,
yeah.
Like I said, people need a little more options, more variety. And if it picks up as a trend, that's great. If not, well, you know, at least it's out there for people who are interested, and maybe it'll inspire somebody to try something new.
We have a blog.
I think it's one of those things that right now dystopian stuff sells.
And that's the thing.
But, you know, because there isn't that variety. Yeah, you know, I'm going to kind of wrap this back to something we were talking about before with women in sci-fi roles. There's a lot of talk of, well, you can't have a female action movie because they don't sell. I think the argument that you really need to make is they haven't been written well. You know, I think it kind of falls back to, because based on your story, people are just kind of pointing the finger at each other. I think we need to try to work on writing good stories and good stories about good things, and try to give more options to on that end of the spectrum to try to make a more happy future, I think,
and
is really what
essentially
we,
what this story is saying.
Yeah.
And
is
it's,
they need more optimism and less
well-written.
It's not so much that they're blaming like doom and gloom. It's just that's what made them realize that they need to write something different. They need other options.
But it's the whole chicken and the egg thing, right? I mean, one reflects the other. One influences the other. I think both sides need to work on being a little bit brighter. Maybe bright.
Well,
because
I mean,
optimistic.
These are people that are writing dystopian novels and short stories and stuff, though, too. So they're trying to change their note, change their tune.
Maybe publishing more bright, optimistic stories about the future will affect our attitude here on Earth, and things will change, and everything will become rosy, and the environment...
Or at least rosier.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I also think that it would just give people an escape from, you know...
Current doom and gloom.
Just current doom and gloom, read something a little happier. So...
Okay. All right. Good point.
From their misery, their if they happen to have a bad day, bad week, bad month.
Yeah.
Reading something that's a little more optimistic would kind of take them out of that.
Yeah.
Versus, oh, well, I guess it could be worse. I could be having my face ripped off by zombies. So, kind of turn it around a little bit.
All right. Great stories, everybody. Allie, wanted to ask you real quick, you're touring all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's your schedule look like for the next couple of months? Where are you going to be hitting as far as dates go?
I'm headed to the Hacker Convention Def Con in Vegas this next weekend. So I've got four shows there, which will be awesome. And then Dragon Con, you guys are probably excited about that. Are you guys going?
No.
No.
Yeah, unfortunately not. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those are my two upcoming.
Do you play a lot of conventions?
Yeah, I try to. I mean, my show seems to work well with that kind of thing.
I bet. That's awesome.
Is there any other place that people can catch your stuff? Like, do you want to point people in a certain direction as far as your internet presence goes? Or?
Yeah, sure. You can find me... Facebook.com/AllieSpagnola.
Okay. Anything coming up that people should be aware of?
No, I'm always putting out new videos and stuff, so check it out.
Yeah, your Vine channel is not to be missed. It's hilarious stuff.
Thanks. I've been starting to try and build that up, so I'm glad that you're liking what I'm making.
I'm glad that some people are still doing original, like, creative stuff on Vine, because Vine has really gone downhill in the last, I don't know, several months. It's not what it used to be, that's for sure.
What did it used to be?
I don't know. It seemed like when it first came out, people were really trying hard to be super creative with what they could do with the platform, right? But now it seems like it's just a bunch of celebrities or like web celebrities trying to, like, using it as a platform for, hey, catch me here, or, you know, it's not really, like, they're not trying as hard as they were. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Got it.
Yeah.
Might be all in who you follow as well.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, very true. Good point. Good point, as always, Anessa. Thank you. All right. So let's wrap up the show. Before we do, though, don't forget you can subscribe to us by going to galacticnetcasts.com, and it's just hit subscribe, and the links will be there. Or you can also go to iTunes, find us there, and also on Stitcher Smart Radio as well. Reach out to us. Our email address is galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, and our voicemail number is 805-328-3966. We're always looking for feedback, you know, what you think about a story that we talked about, or let us know of something that we should be talking about that we haven't touched on yet. So again, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. The voicemail number is 805-328-3966. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ as well. And again, thanks to Allie Spagnola for being our guest geek this week. Thank you, Allie.
Thanks for having
Thank
me.
Thank you very much.
Yay.
Any final thoughts, you guys?
Coors Light's disgusting. I forgot about that.
What a shocker. I wouldn't have guessed that.
I even got some really nice beer when we were in Minneapolis last weekend, and I'm drinking Coors Light. But
shame on you.
Matt Stein bringing classy back.
Yes.
Well, Allie was here, and I figured, you know, what do you drink, Allie? What kind of beer do you drink?
Whatever you're having. Honestly, Coors is a good stunt beer. You can do power hours with it.
Yeah, you know, good point, Allie. I mean, Coors and Coors Light would be a great beer for something like the Power Hour, right?
Because yes. You're not really taking the time to appreciate the beer.
See, it goes down easily, but now it's starting to get a little warm. I'm on number 3, so it's not a great time. But if I was drinking it nonstop for an hour, then, yeah, I'd be fine.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I'm glad that we've established that. Good job, guys. Good job, everybody. All right.
Go team.
All right. I'm going to call this meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club adjourned. So thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Allie. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Dad.
Bye, Dad.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.